Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon, I'm Leo Brown, happy to be with you. Leo Brown Almost Hour. 50 minutes every afternoon, culture, current events, our Catholic faith. 420, heard Mike Allen talking a little bit about that this morning with the date as it is. And the reason why, and I guess I always thought it was because of this police code, which according to this article that I put over on my Facebook page, that's not the case. I get the real reason why. And also the challenge with hotel rooms with the room number 420. So interesting stuff. But Mike was talking about the ethical, I guess, and the question was, is this something that is morally allowable, I suppose, kind of like alcohol consumption? And I got a little bit of personal experience that he doesn't have that I can address this with this afternoon. So we'll talk about that. Also, apparently, loneliness can physically break your heart. We'll get into that discussion. And why it's important to have solitude. The balance there. And confirmed Eucharistic miracle. All of that and more this afternoon. More to come in just a moment. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this.
Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown, happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. If by chance you hear some odd binging and dinging in the background, it could be my cell phone, which seems to be making noises today, and I always keep my phone on silent. It's either completely silent or vibrating, and never will it make a sound. I've checked the settings, and it all seems to be right, but I did have a system update last night, right? Oh, the dreaded system updates, which means you've pretty much got complete unpredictability at this point in your device after that. So not sure what's going to happen. So if you hear some odd things, that it could be, just could be my my phone giving me alerts that I don't want it to give me. What do you do? It is 420. So maybe that's the reason why it's got a mind of its own, because it's my phone is totally stoned right now. That could be the case. So this Telegraph article I posted over on my Facebook page, and I found it interesting. I listened to Mike Allen often, and he was talking about this morning and basically asking, can this be morally acceptable for Catholics to say, yeah, recreational use of marijuana, especially if it's legal, why does it matter? And we do know that there's a prohibition against drunkenness. And the reason why there's a prohibition against drunkenness is that there is a there's something about being impaired that is obviously an impairment. There's something that says you are not you do not have the sense that you would normally have. In this state, you have a full sense of whatever it may be, and there's really something that you have to consider here when it comes to moderation, right? And that moderation looks different for everyone when it comes to alcohol, and Mike had that discussion, that there are those who might be able to withstand a significant amount of alcohol consumption without any real impairment to the point of being, obviously, you don't want to operate a car, but you're not going to do stupid stuff. You are yourself. You are in control. Now, I'm not sure that there's that balance point with marijuana, right? And I can say this. I can say this because rarely a day went by that I didn't smoke marijuana when I was from the age of, sometime in my late 20s in college until my mid-20s, right? I did this a lot. Now, granted, I probably was pretty excessive, but oftentimes it was not even the same experience, depending on what I happened to be using. It could be there's a degree of unpredictability. And I thought that I was at a point of pretty much functioning, right? That's just what I did, and I kind of stayed in this stoner state. But there were times where my behavior could be erratic because I would be ridiculously paranoid at a particular time, right? And there was this sort of edgy concern of things just being really wrong, or like, what the heck is going on? Or there could be times where I was kind of just cloudy, really kind of not sure what was happening. And yeah, I would be out operating a motor vehicle. I would be driving, and I would kind of get lost in this moment of like, man, I don't even know where I am right now, and I'm driving a car. I mean, those are the kind of things that I would ask. So I don't think the same thing as having a drink and having complete control, knowing what your limits are, knowing that a glass of wine with a meal, or having a cocktail at a social function, and then going about your business, whatever that happens to be, you're probably going to be in control of that. Again, if you're aware of how your body works and what you're capable of. I don't think that predictability is there in marijuana usage. And therefore, I would say, no, the unpredictability of this is such that there is no moral acceptance of that with the use of this substance. So that's me, based on experience. I, unlike Mike and former President Clinton, can say that I've had the experience to know better. So on this 420, I would say I would call it not morally acceptable. I don't speak for the church. I'm not a magisterial. There's nothing official in my assessment other than personal experience. So this is interesting, though, because this is the story that I posted over my Facebook page. There's a lot of speculation of what this 420 is all about. And the one that I always thought was the 420 pot bust for police coding, which apparently that's not the case. And police say there's nothing, has nothing to do with that. And then we met friends on a cruise recently who were staying in room 420. They were from Canada. And I can't imagine that there's international codes, because they thought it was funny that they happened to be in that particular room. So apparently that's not the case, nor is it the day of Bob Marley's death, because that was November 5th. And it's not his birthday either. So it has nothing to do with that. Chemical compounds in marijuana. Some say that there's 420, and apparently there's 315. So that's not the case. So it seems, according to this article from the Telegraph.co.uk, is that it's about a Bob Dylan song, Rainy Day Women, which number 12 and 35, he insisted that everybody must get stoned. 12 times 35 is 420. So we got Bob Dylan to thank, apparently, for this 420 hoopla. So that all leading to this, which I think is probably a more interesting element to this day, is this Bob Marley. I guess this face melding stuff is pretty popular on Facebook. I've seen this with adults putting kids' faces on their images and then doing weird stuff. And found this over at theverge.com. Snapchat enables tasteless Bob Marley selfie lens for 420. So you can make yourself look like Bob Marley, and that's how you celebrate this day. And obviously there are some who think that this is, well, as this article happens to say, tasteless, because first off, you're taking someone's image and kind of manipulating it for this particular whatever recognition, if you will, of this day. And the question really is, not only is it a racially sensitive situation, is it truly insensitive to the individual's dignity, right? Because we want to protect the dignity. We talk about this all the time, especially for Catholics. This is the absolute be-all, end-all measuring rod of morality. Is this dignified? Is there something about this that could look like we're compromising dignity because of what we're doing? If we are, then we've crossed the moral line. But we don't do that. We do not allow the dignity of anyone to be compromised. And that's what I love about being Catholic, among many things. But I think that there's something so beautiful about that expression of faith that says everyone, anyone, human, is potentially they're on their way to deification, right? This is God became man so man could become God. And as there's an incarnational reality to all of us, right? This is what theology of the body teaches, that there's something so sacred about the human person. And that sacredness is not just reserved for individuals in the womb, or even reserved for individuals who happen to be alive and walking around. We respect and uphold the dignity of each individual. And so if it's something that seems to be lessening or cheapening that individual because we're putting on a Bob Marley mask that happens to be a Snapchat lens, then maybe there's something wrong with that. And even if it's done in fun, it's still a bizarre way of treating someone. It's not necessarily honoring them. If you're honoring them, you would put an image of them, a true image of them, not something that is strangely distorted because you're putting that image onto you. And I know that sounds weird, right? I mean, it's like, why would you even be concerned about that? Of all the things to be concerned about, why be concerned about that? And I think it's simply because of the dignity that we afford each and every individual. It's not like, hey, somebody's throwing on dreadlocks and going to a costume party, which there have been those who've been challenged on that as well, especially from a racial standpoint. When a white guy goes and puts blackface on and does all this, there's sensitivities there that we've got to realize as well. But I do find it a little degrading. I do find it degrading. And I think that, you know, I would agree with this question that's there, that maybe this is tasteless and not necessarily the way to respect someone's dignity. And there are better ways of doing that. Not that we would know that Bob Marley wants to be associated with 420 anyway. Rastafarianism, not necessarily just about being a stoner. So there's a little bit deeper realization there. More to come in just a moment. Want to get into this difference between loneliness and solitude. A couple of stories that I posted over on my Facebook page. We'll be back with more. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Leo C. Brown over at Facebook. You can follow me there. You can chime in on the many things that we talk about, like this particular post that I happened to throw out there last night, and lots of responses on this one. And I've heard it said that if Christianity were proven a hoax, that those of us who practice a Christian lifestyle would basically have no reason to lead a moral life, right? Why? It's all out the window. It's all a hoax. And the question I have is, well, what about the other half of that equation? Do we just love our neighbor because we're morally commanded to, or do we have obligations, simple obligations, to those around us that say we need to maintain morality for their sake, at the very least? Or are we so ridiculously selfish that we would just throw it all out? So lots of interesting responses. Those who say that, you know, there's no need for a religious morality to make sure that someone maintains the moral code. Some say that, well, it is certainly because of that faith life that they have that requires and calls them to that degree of morality. But I think that it's good to think about this kind of stuff, because hopefully, right, hopefully, if we're going to really have an impact with any sort of effective evangelization, which that can simply be the way we live our life, it doesn't necessarily have to be a formal mode of attempting to bring people to the flock necessarily. It could simply be, how do we do what we do? Do we do it in a way that is effective, that others could see? Then I think a part of that, as odd as it sounds, and I've said this for years upon years, part of that has to be taking God out of the equation. If you could truly remove that element and still basically have the lifestyle that you have, by and large, then I think that that speaks volumes to those who think, right, that this is just some sort of restrictive moral code that basically says what not to do and how not to do it, and all you're doing is living for the hope of something to come as opposed to living for the now and realizing that there's beauty in the present that we have, and really, regardless of a promise of something more, this is what we're given. What are we doing with this? So, not to get too deep into that philosophy, but I think that we have to really think about the way we live and what others see, and regardless of what our motivation is, how does that boil down? What could it look like again if we took God out of the equation? Would we still have a witness? Which I know sounds crazy, but I think that's the only way we have any authenticity. I think that's the only way we have the opportunity to make that impact. So a couple of interesting stories that I pulled off of a couple of websites that I'm normally not on, but I've recently started subscribing to a couple of different news services that kind of feed me a bunch of different stuff. And so L.com, which I got to admit is not something I typically look at ever, but because it showed up, I thought, well, there's an interesting story. And it's the, and I think I say that right, it's ELLE, it's the women's magazine. Loneliness will literally break your heart, says science, which I think that we know that there are physical elements of depression. Oftentimes depression comes from those severed relationships. This is one of the primary reasons, and even depression attacks even within healthy relationships. We know that that can happen, but the depressing effects of loneliness, they are scientifically proven to create health problems and perhaps even lead to untimely death. So that's the and what the caution, I guess, in this article is. So don't isolate yourself. There are those who, unfortunately, after a challenge relationally, will just make it even worse by being an isolationist, being in isolation and not allowing that human interaction because the fear of being hurt again, right? And they don't want to subject themselves into that. And I know what that's like. I've been in that world as a young man, no doubt. I was kind of goes back to the funk that I lived in for several years as a young 20-something was part of that whole dynamic. But then the other side of this, which this is from Inc.com, The Science of Solitude. And as this is presented, there's something necessary for these times of aloneness. Now, not necessarily loneliness, but to escape everything and everyone and all other influences, and which is difficult this day and age because we get so wrapped up in being accessible or having access that we never really separate ourselves off to that point of saying, I'm just going to have some alone time. But there's something that's critical to our human existence and a recharging, not just a time of sleep where we're in this mode of not being fully aware, but an awareness of this time of ourselves and others, but just this time of solitude. And I think it's interesting that we certainly see this modeled in Jesus, who had a very difficult time finding solitude, obviously, because people found him. And after, especially after the feeding of the 5,000, he was in demand, right? This guy can create food. He can feed us from almost nothing, and he's done it. We want to go back and get that. And, right, he tried to escape, tried to get away, tried to find these moments of solitude, and then he was met by throngs of individuals who wanted to get some more of what he had to offer, which wasn't really what he had to offer. And then, of course, this is where we end up with an understanding of this Eucharistic reality that he presents in John 6, where we know that he talks about his flesh, his blood and his body and his blood being the food, not this this food that he would multiply. So even Jesus in his earthly walk had to find these times of separation, recharging, reconnecting. And it's certainly why we as Catholics value things like retreats. And we don't always necessarily, even a retreat isn't necessarily a perfect time of solitude. But I know the retreats that I've experienced, usually there's some time for that, right? There's a time just to get out and walk, perhaps. I've been to facilities with outdoor stations of the cross or just a nature walk out in a garden area or maybe through the woods. These things where you can actually stop and begin to reflect and find these times. But we don't have to wait for a retreat to do something of this nature. We really kind of need to build this somewhere into our routines, which I know is difficult, right? It's very difficult, especially with young children and demands of jobs and all of the things that we do, family, life in general, you name it. But can we find those times? Because they're crucial and vital for us. Now, one of the things I do, and I'm not necessarily perfectly in solitude when I do this, but I do spend an hour in adoration every week. I find a time to go and to enter into prayer. Usually I'm journaling, and I'm journaling on my phone. So if you see me in adoration, and I intentionally sit in the back, right? I used to sit closer to the front. I sit all the way to the back because I don't want to distract. I know I shouldn't be worried about what other people are, I don't know, but I am. I'm conscious of the fact that others could look at me and go, Leo is just working. That's all he's doing here. I see he's not stopping. But generally what I'm doing is I kind of have a method of things that I do. I read the readings from Mass. I read the saint reflection. So I'll be there in my Laudate app looking at these things. And then I journal, and I got a stylus on my Galaxy Note, and I pull it out and I just start journaling, and I write a lot in prayer. And it's, again, maybe not the times of getting completely separate away from everything and having this time of reflection, but it's just a little way to reconnect and to have that opportunity. So if you don't have that, if you're not finding that, I think it's undoubtedly vitally important. It's proven to be effective. It's a model we see in Christ. It's something that we need to try to embrace and try to find ways to incorporate. So think about that. Again, the article from Inc.com over at my Facebook page, Leo C. Brown. So in Poland, it looks like we've got what appears to be, well, I guess what is now, justifiably a Eucharistic miracle. And, you know, that's kind of oxymoronic, I suppose, to say that there's this Eucharistic miracle that's discovered, because every Eucharist is a miracle. That's something we got to understand. But now it appears as though this one has gotten the actual official stamp of approval that this happened. And it's interesting when these things happen. We'll talk more in a minute about the details of this, but I think the important thing to remember is it's not about the extraordinary. It's about those miracles that are really ordinary, right? The ones that occur every day at Mass. We got to see what that's all about as well. But we'll talk about this in just a moment. More to come. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We are back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. 50 minutes every afternoon, culture, current events, our Catholic faith. That's what we talk about. And I mentioned this right before the break. And speaking of our faith, pretty exciting stuff coming from Poland with this, what it seems to be a Eucharistic miracle. And we hear that, and it's kind of sensational, right? Like, ooh, wow, wow. So it really is. It really is the body and blood of Christ, which, you know, I understand getting excited about that kind of stuff when this happens. And there are those Eucharistic miracles that have happened for centuries that are recurring miracles that are still there in Spain and you name it, wherever there's a number of these. But I think in this, what it should remind us, and really, this is kind of what it's all about, right? Is that miracle is there all the time. The miracle is there in every Eucharist. And that miracle is available whenever we want it. And I don't think that we necessarily take advantage of that as often as we should. I know I'm guilty of having a Mass every day, at least three of them, within a 10-minute drive, probably. Something of that nature. And I've got so many things to do, right? How do I make it there? How do I do that? And I've kind of ebbed and flowed on that in my faith life over the years, that there are times I'm very devoted and I'm there every day. And then there are times that I'm a weekend only. But if that is the case, so be it. The Sunday obligation, quote unquote, which is not something that I necessarily like to call it, but that opportunity that we have every Sunday should be what propels us anyway, because that's what it's about, right? It's keeping the Sabbath holy. But I love these stories when they come along, and because sometimes, especially this one, is getting a lot of media attention right now, certainly within the Catholic world. And it's an opportunity to put it out there in ways that people go, okay. And yeah, be skeptical. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But at the same time, take a look at this and go, wow, you know, why would this happen? And I realize that there are always those who think, okay, really? Come on. But again, it is an opportunity to at least share this information with those who may be skeptical and look a little more closely and begin to explore that. So that's what I would do with this. Maybe we don't need the reminder so much, or maybe we do. I don't know. But the real opportunity comes from sharing that information and maybe even having discussions about it. So neat stuff. But you can explore. There's a zillion of them out there throughout the centuries, and many of them, like I say, still recurring and available to see to this day. Neat stuff. So I found this, and I was just surprised. And I was talking about kind of a couple of these news culling sites that I've set up, where I just kind of subscribe to a lot of different news sources and see these things coming across my links there. This one was Quartz. I'm not familiar with QZ.com, but this story is about poverty tourism. And in this story, they talk about things like people who go to New Orleans and then tour the abandoned, flooded out neighborhoods of the Fifth Ward, and you know, it's like this bizarre world of kind of voyeurism into things that, or you know, incredibly impoverished shanty towns, and they just want to go and kind of gawk and look at this. And I think that this is shameful that this would even take place, especially when there are those who are in need in these areas, and these are people who are just going on vacation and find it interesting or fascinating or some degree of appeal to go and look at things of this nature, where there are people who are on display who are in need. Very bizarre. And I don't even know why this is a thing, but apparently it is, right? There are those who have a bizarre fascination and curiosity, and they're willing to put people on display in this way and make it a tourist attraction. Bizarre. Really, really weird. And we talk a lot, as we already have today, about dignity, the dignity of individuals. There is absolutely nothing dignified about that. Now, if we're willing to go and help these individuals, and there's a way that they would welcome our help and we could be there to provide those services, that's different. That we're not there with them as an attraction, as a way to voyeur into this world of things that we find fascinating. It's we're there with a heart to say, how can we help you? Now, the other interesting thing is that some individuals don't want that help. They're completely content living the way they live. I've heard stories of this nature, of these communities that people try to step into and assist, and it's just nobody wants it. They don't necessarily want that outside help. They're skeptical of that, and they believe they're just fine living the way they live. And if that's the case, then so be it. But we don't want to put people on display as if they're some sort of attraction. Just weird. Very, very weird. We were talking yesterday to Father Thomas Loya, talking about the model, the artist model, and certainly his experience as an art school student, having this exchange and this mutual self-respect for what is taking place, and how that can be incredibly dignified and a beautiful expression of the human form without it being weird, without it being objectification, without it being pornification, none of this, but just the beauty of what is taking place between the artist and the model. Completely different. And I think that it's always these interesting shades of what makes something right and something wrong. Again, people in need, we don't go and gawk at them and look at the strange living conditions. We offer help. If they accept it, we give it. and a completely different dynamic as a result. So strange to say the least, and I would hope that we would not find ourselves being allured into that. So a question I asked, got a lot of comments on this one as well. We know that Pope Francis was criticized, say it isn't so, Pope Francis criticized, no, for basically saying to atheists, we will meet you doing good, right? Whatever you're doing, we'll be out there with you. So we're not doing good when we voyeur into poverty, but if we go and embrace those individuals with real help, we'll do that together. And there are those who I know personally who happen to claim atheism who would do that. They have the heart to go out and help. I know that. I know those individuals personally. And so I happened to hear this discussion yesterday, and it was about kind of this abysmal reality of atheism. And yes, we realize as people of faith that ultimately, if this is where you are, and we don't know, we pray for the grace of God. We pray for the grace of God to everyone to be extended in every opportunity. Who knows, right? We don't know. But there are certainly those who live with every outward example of that not being the case, that they don't seem to be in some sort of abysmal reality, that they are living and loving life. But the statement I made was, you know, what does atheism demand, right? I mean, it demands a degree of personal confidence and faith. There's no doubt about that. But it's there's something about the demands of the Christian life, of what I say in this particular post, free will. There's something about the choice to choose your way or God's way that is just an incredible degree of responsibility that we have to realize. So I get that there can be an expression of what appears to be joy and maybe even hope for tomorrow, or hope for a long earthly life, or hope to make an impact and leave that. But it's not the same as the demands and the challenge, really. I mean, this is why it's discipleship, because it's discipline, right? Discipleship doesn't come about because something's easy. You don't get disciplined into the things that come naturally. That's not a discipline. The discipline is going against the grain of your natural tendencies, going against the grain of the things that are just easy, and then finding ways to mold yourself to something better. And that's really what the demands of free will says, right? That you've got free will. You can go your own way. You can go the easy way, or you can step it up a notch and do the tough stuff. And by doing the tough stuff, find reward not just later on. It's not all just delayed gratification. There's tremendous reward from doing the tough stuff right now. There is something about the moment, about the presence, about something that is happening at this particular instance that can be rewarding in that. Lots of comments over there. You can comment as well. Leo C. Brown on Facebook. Happy to have you over there. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Thank you for listening. God bless.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.